the harp. So it's true, he thought. It's really true. The Harp by Linda Sue Park. The old magician took off his cape slowly. He had earned it, the ancient green cape bestowed on him in gratitude for his life's work. There was a scroll as well, inscribed with real gold leaf. For distinguished service to humankind. It hadn't been easy, serving humankind in the late 20th and early 21st centuries. The problems in every corner of the world had been endless, and at times seemingly insurmountable. But the hardest part of his job was that very few people believed in magic anymore, which meant that he and his colleagues could not perform the sweeping dramatic acts that had made magicians, witches, wizards, mages, seers, and shamans renowned and revered over the millennia of human existence. These days, they would be laughed at as charlatans or crackpots, or worse. Instead, they had to work in secret and with stealth. Good timing, coincidence, serendipity. The tools of the modern magician's trade. The rain that doused a spark before it became a forest fire. A better than average harvest. A long lost friend found via an internet search for kumquats. There had been times when he longed to put together something a bit more dramatic, but he had stifled that desire for the greater good. Now, he would retire for a well-earned rest and work perhaps just a little magic closer to home. Emma and Francis were taking one of their bicker walks in the woods not far from their home. They went for bicker walks regularly, several times a week, in fact. The sisters bickered constantly, the full range from snide twits to wide-open, full-throttle arguments. Especially in the summer, when they were home together for long hours. Whenever one parent or the other got tired of hearing them, they were told, "Take yourselves and your bickering out of the house this instant." Today, by the time the girls reached the path into the woods, they had completely forgotten the cause of this particular walk, having already embarked on a new bicker. "I get the first one."
"Why should you get it? I want it just as much as you do."
"I want it more."
"No, I want it more."
"How do you know how much I want it?
You think you know everything."
They were arguing about who got to pick the first blackberry. But it was only June, too early for blackberries, which meant that they were bickering over something that didn't even exist yet. Emma was almost 12 and would be in sixth grade in the fall. Before this particular walk, she would have said that she didn't believe in magic. Francis, 2 years younger, would have said she wasn't sure. One minute, they were ambling toward a stand of brambles. The next, they were in a cave. A man stood before them with a harp at his side. Emma blinked several times.
"This can't be happening," she thought. And then, "What a cliched thing to think. But anyway, it must be a dream. So I'll go with it for now."
Except for his sudden presence, there was nothing terribly frightening about the man. He was rather ordinary looking, medium height, with a tanned complexion, gray hair, and dark eyes. The only unusual thing about him being his cape. It had some fraying around the edges, but was a cheerful green hue between lime and emerald. Emma thought a black cape might have been scarier, if scary was the effect he was going for. It took him only moments to cast the spell, which he did by whirling the cape around his body and over his head several times. Francis made a noise of admiration
and Emma sensed that her sister was longing to try cape whirling herself. Then the magician handed Emma a scroll and vanished, having said not a word. Emma immediately began reading aloud from the parchment. The spell will be broken when Francis learns to play the harp well enough to satisfy the conditions set by the writer William Congreve, who wrote, "Music hath charms to soothe a savage breast, to soften rocks, or bend a knotted oak."
You are permitted to leave the cave as necessary, but do not attempt to leave the woods. You are in a bubble of time. Your family will not miss you. Time will pass much more slowly for them than for you.
Emma?
It was Francis's voice, but it came from the ground near Emma's feet. Emma looked down and let out a screech of horror. Francis had been turned into a frog. Emma screeched a few more times and hyperventilated. Francis hopped madly around the cave. After this reasonable interval of panic, the sisters... If your sister has been turned into a frog, she's still your sister, isn't she? Decided together that neither of them was dreaming. They calmed down, doing their best to think brave thoughts. Emma, I have to figure this out and take care of Francis.
Francis,
I've always been the adventurous one. I have to keep my head here, or else Emma will really freak out.
Their first plan was to try to leave the woods, Emma carrying Francis in the palm of her hand. They smacked right into an invisible barrier, like a force field in science fiction movies. After some exploration, they determined that the barrier had a rough circumference of perhaps 100 yards, with the stream marking part of it, which Francis discovered by jumping in from one bank and trying to jump out the other side. Wham into the force field, splash back into the stream. Escape thus stymied, the sisters turned to the other terms of the spell. Emma was in her second year of violin lessons, but a violin was very different from a harp. She had never even seen a harp up close. Still, she knew more about music than Francis did. Francis had never played a musical instrument. She had just finished third grade and would not begin music lessons until fourth. Besides which, she was now a frog.
"No, I won't go. You can't make me."
Brian slammed his bedroom door, then kicked it a few times. What he'd said wasn't true. Dad could indeed make him stay with Gramps for the summer. Mom would at least have listened. She had always done her best to treat him like a sixth grader, not a baby. But she probably would have sided with Dad in the end, and then Brian would have been mad at both of them. No, that didn't make any sense either. If Mom were still alive, there wouldn't be any talk about Brian living with Gramps all summer. Gramps had brought up the idea at Mom's funeral in February.
"It'll do you good," Gramps said.
"How could living in the middle of nowhere do me any good?" Brian yelled, right there in the funeral home.
Everyone stared, then turned away uneasily. Brian stormed out of the building. Unable to think of what else to do, he sat in the car and missed the whole service. Missed his chance to say a last goodbye to Mom. A whole summer where he didn't know anyone, miles away from anything to do. It was typical of the way his life was going these days. He had gotten in trouble at school several times for cutting classes. He'd quit playing soccer right before he would have gotten kicked off the team for yelling at everyone. The refs and the opponents and his teammates, too. He had driven away his friends one by one with his angry outbursts and overall surliness.
and Dad thought Brian spent too much time on the computer or playing video games. Dad was always nagging at him to get outside, ride his bike, do something. Gramps didn't have a computer or a game system. He didn't even have a television.
Radio and good books, Gramps always said. Don't need more than that.
It was going to be the worst summer of Brian's life. Gramps himself was okay, as grown-ups went. Brian didn't really know him all that well. He didn't talk much, and neither did Brian, which seemed to suit both of them. And things began to look up a little the day after Brian's dad left to go back to the city.
Thought we'd go to the animal shelter, Gramps said at the breakfast table. Been meaning to get a dog. Now's as good a time as any.
Brian sat up straight for the first time in months. He had always wanted a dog, but pets weren't allowed in the apartment where he and Dad lived.
You'll have to stay here when you go back,
Gramps said. Of course, no good news without bad to go with it. There were 15 dogs in the shelter. All of them were sort of something. Sort of spaniel, sort of retriever, sort of terrier. Each dog nosed through the bars of its cage and wagged its tail when Brian approached. How was he ever going to choose? 3 times he went around the crates and was no closer to a decision than when he began. At one point, Brian looked up to see every single dog staring at him, and he could have sworn they all had hope in their eyes. Brian felt confusion first, followed by the familiar warmth of anger stirring inside him. I thought this would be fun, but now I don't know what to do. I can't pick one over another. I hate this. This is stupid, he said to Gramps. It's going to be your dog. You should choose. Gramps gazed at him steadily.
I don't care. You pick.
Brian turned away, glaring at the floor. He hated when people said that. I don't care. It always made him want to shout, care! Why don't you care? It seemed like there were so many things people didn't care about. Like all these dogs. An idea hit him. A really good idea. The dogs, he said to the volunteer. Out of all of them, which one is there one whose time is almost up? The woman pointed without hesitation.
That one, she said. He's been here for almost a month.
A tan and gray dog. White face, pointed ears and snout. A sort of husky.
He came in off the street. No tags, the woman said. That means you get to name him whatever you want.
She opened the cage and the dog trotted right to Brian. He knelt down and scratched it behind the ears.
Hey there, Brian said softly. Wanna come home with us?
The dog whined a little and wagged his tail. He looked at Brian as if trying to tell him something. Douglas, Brian said. The name had popped into his head out of the blue. He looked up at Gramps. It would be Gramps' dog after Brian left.
Is that okay? Douglas,
Gramps said slowly, as if he were tasting the name. Then a little louder.
Douglas?
The dog turned his head to look at Gramps.
He already knows his name, the volunteer said with a grin. You could call him Dougie for short, maybe.
Brian wanted to point out that Dougie was hardly any shorter than Douglas, but he decided not to. She was only trying to be nice. And not 5 minutes after they got back to Gramps' place, it turned out that Dougie was a pretty good name after all. Because after the dog marked the whole backyard,
he started to dig. He dug and dug and dug.
Dougie. On the very first day of harp practice, Frances pointed out the obvious. "I can't play the normal way," she said. "My arms, my front legs aren't long enough to get at the strings from both sides."
She plucked at the bottom of one string, which gave out a dismal twang, then hopped up on the frame and stretched for the higher strings.
"This is impossible," she complained. "I can't even reach all of them."
After some discussion, the sisters decided that nothing in the rules barred Emma from helping Frances. After all, it was Emma who had carried the harp out of the cave and placed it on a flat rock next to the stream, so Frances could have easy access to the water when she wanted a quick dip or a drink.
"Gotta stay hydrated," Frances said,
exercising her newly acquired frog instincts. And of course, Emma needed to teach Frances the basics of music. Now she picked Frances up and stood next to the harp.
"Look," Emma said, "I can hold my hands like this."
She spread them about 8 inches apart.
"And you can hop from one to the other, and I can move them to put you wherever you want to be."
This strategy enabled Frances to reach all the strings. The next task was to figure out how she could elicit a true note from the harp. It required delicate maneuvering for Frances to pluck a string with a webbed toe. She also found it difficult to keep her throat from puffing out. When her throat touched a vibrating string, not only did the sound die, but her whole head twangled and twizzled.
"Put me down," Frances said at the end of the first day.
She flopped on the ground, exhausted.
"I've never been so tired in my whole life. Will you catch me some flies, please?"
"The bluey-green ones are the nicest," Emma said. "Catch your own flies." Cue noisy bickering, which lasted until Frances splashed off in a huff.
This is the end of disc number 2. Please continue listening on disc number 3.
After a week, Frances could pluck out a recognizable rendition of "Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star." And Emma was so sick of hearing it that she had to remind herself not to clench her fists. Frances might not be able to land easily on a fist and might fall. In the worst-case bad-timing scenario, Emma could end up with a handful of squashed frog sister. So she gritted her teeth instead.
"But it doesn't sound like a harp," Frances said. "It just sounds like plucking. Harp music, it should have parts where, you know, you play a whole bunch of the strings fast, so it sounds like a waterfall or something."
"Glissando," Emma said. "You're right." For the next several days, the sisters developed and practiced a glissando technique. It involved Frances extending one toe to rake over the strings while Emma moved her hand back and forth. Glissandos were hard on poor Frances. Her whole body juddered bone-shakingly each time. She developed blisters on her toes, and the webs of her feet got all stretched out.
"It's all right for you," Frances grumbled. "You're not a frog."
Emma had no answer to that. Dougie's enthusiasm for digging seemed boundless. But he wouldn't dig just anywhere. He would trot around, sniff here and there, paw at the ground a little, and often reject a spot, followed by more trotting and sniffing. He left behind a landscape comprising holes of various sizes, mounds of grass and leaves mixed with soil, and patches of plowed-up earth. Gramps' yard, both front and back, looked like the site of a major archaeological dig. A few days after Dougie came to live with them, Gramps got fed up.
"Don't want him digging up the yard anymore," he said. "Take that dog into the woods. Let him dig there."
Brian scowled and pressed his lips together. Felt like Gramps was kicking Dougie out of the yard, just like Dad had kicked Brian out of the apartment.
Gramps gave Brian a quick look, as if he knew what Brian was thinking.
"While you're out there, you might try listening for the music."
"What music?"
"Woods music," Gramps said.
Brian stared in surprise. That was weird coming from Gramps. Too poetic or something.
Gramps had already taken Brian on a couple of walks through the woods. He showed Brian where the main paths were and how the stream would lead him to the road if he ever got lost.
Gramps seemed to know everything about the woods, but as usual, he didn't talk much on their walks, which was fine with Brian. He wanted to discover the woods himself.
On entering the woods with Dougie, Brian had to smile at the dog's response. Dougie was practically beside himself with joy, sniffing madly at everything, bounding through the trees ahead of Brian, coming back to his side, bounding away again.
Brian lost sight of Dougie for a few moments, then caught up with him at a big old oak tree. The tree had apparently passed the Dougie sniff test, because now the dog was digging happily at its base. He paused and barked a few times.
"What is it, Dougie boy?"
Brian squatted down, but Dougie barked again, looking up at the tree's broad branches. Brian frowned.
"Is there something up there? You want me to go see?"
The old oak was that rarest of specimens, a perfect climbing tree. In just a few minutes, Brian was up amid the branches, seeing the woods from a whole new angle. The lower limbs were broad enough to sit on comfortably, and Brian immediately began making plans.
"I could bring lunch and a book."
Dougie dug contentedly at the base of the tree while Brian made his plans in the branches.
"Maybe even build a treehouse, or at least some kind of platform. A basket with a rope so I could haul Dougie up."
As Brian was getting ready to climb back down, he froze and lifted his head like a deer on alert.
Was that music?
Brian frowned, listening hard. Perhaps he had imagined it. Or it could have been something else, like a bird.
No, not a bird.
It had definitely sounded like some kind of musical instrument. A guitar, or something with strings anyway. He heard it again, and this time he was sure. Not really a tune, but a whole bunch of notes all blurring together, as if someone was running a finger over the strings of whatever it was. The music was coming from deeper in the woods.
"If I got up higher, maybe I could see."
Brian climbed quickly. He got more than halfway up the tree. The branches weren't nearly as broad here. Holding onto a branch over his head, he scooted sideways out onto a limb, trying to find a clear line of sight through the trees. He focused hard on the music. It was so faint that at times he could barely hear it. Then it would get a tiny bit louder, and at those moments, he thought he almost recognized
a ABC song?
Or maybe Twinkle Twinkle Little Star? Wait, it could be Ba Ba Black Sheep. Never noticed it before, but they all have almost the same tune. Brian was concentrating so hard on listening that he didn't notice he was leaning toward the sound. Bit by imperceptible bit, his feet shifted. The branch began to sag under Brian's weight. With each tiny movement he made, It bent a little more.
Brian was now singing softly, trying to fit the words to the tune. H-I-J-K-L-M-N-O.
Yikes!
The bent bough snapped. Brian fell, twigs scratching him and leaves whipping into his eyes. He prayed that he would break an arm or a leg, not his neck. He landed, rolled, and sat up in astonishment. No crack of broken bones.
No pain at all, in fact.
Just Dougie's warm breath and wet tongue greeting him. Brian had fallen into a large, soft mound of dirt and leaf mold. Beside the pile was a big hole. Dougie had done his thing again.
Francis was finally proficient at Twinkle Twinkle and could even throw in a decent glissando or two. The sisters were now trying to satisfy the musical standards of the spell.
Okay, so we've got to soothe a savage beast, soften rocks, or bend a knotted oak, Emma said, quoting the parchment.
Do you think we have to do all three? Or just one of them?
It says or, Emma pointed out. But we should probably try to do all of them.
Just to be safe, Francis agreed.
There were lots of squirrels in the woods and many birds, too. Emma had seen a deer a couple of times and a raccoon at the stream one evening.
I don't think you could call any of those savage, she said.
Are there bears? Francis asked. Bears would definitely count as savage.
I've never heard of bears out here, Emma said. And besides, there is no way in this lifetime that I'm going to hold you while you try to soothe a rampaging bear by playing Twinkle Twinkle.
Minnows, Francis proposed. I've seen lots of minnows in the stream. Maybe some of them are baby piranhas. Do you think potentially savage beasts count?
Emma wasn't sure if potential counted, and she was even less sure that the minnows were piranhas. They tried anyway.
Emma threw a handful of crumbs into the water. Bread, cheese, and fruit appeared nightly in the cave for her, nourishing and tasty, albeit monotonous, to draw the minnows close. Francis plucked away. But the minnows continued their usual darting and twitching and did not seem the least bit soothed. The sisters then decided that, in the interest of safety, attempts to soothe any other beasts should be last on their list. They tried rock softening next.
You know how if you sing a really high note, you can shatter a glass? Francis said hopefully. Maybe it works like that.
Emma fetched rocks of assorted sizes and types and lined them up next to the harp. Francis played her heart out. Nothing happened. The rocks were utterly unperturbed by Twinkle Twinkle, with or without glissandos. After a few fruitless hours, Emma swept the rocks away and replaced them with a variety of sticks from a nearby oak tree. Together, the sisters went through several dozen more repetitions of the song.
Anything?
Francis panted, her throat swelling. Emma set Francis down on the rock. She picked up a stick and examined it closely.
Maybe, she said slowly. I think, I'm not sure, it could be a tiny bit more bent than it was before. Let's keep going. Just a little longer.
It's no use,
Francis said at last, in both exhaustion and despair. She hopped into the stream to refresh herself. Emma flung away the stick she was holding. As she walked back to the cave, she felt her resolve crumbling. There was no way harp music could soften a rock or bend a piece of wood.
Did that mean? Would they be stuck here forever? And poor Francis.
Would she be a frog for the rest of her life?
In the distance, Brian could see a girl with her back to him. She was standing next to the stream playing a harp. All he could really see was that she had dark curly hair. Since he had first heard the music, Brian had spent a lot of time in the woods trying to trace its source. With Dougie at his side, he had tramped over what seemed like every inch of the woods. But he hadn't heard the music again all summer. Instead, he heard other things. Birdsong, rain pattering on the leaves, the sigh of the wind in the upper branches, the rustles and buzzes of hundreds of tiny creatures going about their lives. The near silence that was full of life.
He heard the real music of the woods,
and he liked it so much, he stopped feeling compelled to find that other music. Now, when he wasn't looking for it, here it was again. The girl was downstream from him, and on the far side. Brian stayed put. He felt that if he moved too close or tried to call out to her, she would simply disappear. It didn't feel like a silly thought. Maybe it was his imagination, but there definitely seemed to be something weird and otherworldly in the air. Weird, but not scary. Brian eased himself down onto a rock. It was rough-surfaced and uneven, not the most comfortable seat. Dougie sat beside him, and Brian curled his fingers into the soft fur on the dog's nape. Brian wasn't a musician himself, or he might have noticed that the girl was in the wrong position to play a harp, facing the strings rather than astride its frame. And he was too far away to see that she wasn't actually even touching the strings. But he could hear the music. The ABC song, or maybe Twinkle Twinkle, as he had never heard it before. It was as if the harp and the stream were playing together. Plinks and splashes, ripples and waves, water and notes in perfect counterpoint. Harp music, stream music, woods music. They all came together, and Brian found himself thinking of Gramps and his dad, and then his mom. And soon, tears were sliding down his cheeks, and Dougie was nudging closer to comfort him. Brian had no idea how long he sat there crying quietly, oblivious to the cold, hard rock beneath him. The harp music ended. Still in a daze, he didn't notice when the girl disappeared among the trees, nor did he hear the tiny plop of a frog diving into the stream. Brian hugged Dougie, stood up slowly, and took one last look at the harp. "So it's true," he thought. "It's really true. Woods music." "Come on, Dougie," he said aloud. "Time to go home." The next morning, Emma woke in the cave to see Francis still asleep next to her. Francis the person, not Francis the frog. Emma whooped and woke her sister, who, in her first dazed and confused moments, hopped on all fours several times before readjusting to her 2 feet.
"We did it! We did it!" Emma crowed. But how?"
Francis said, even as she hugged her sister in excitement.
"We didn't soften the rocks, or bend any of that wood, or soothe a savage beast either. I don't get it."
Emma grabbed the parchment, which they had kept rolled up under a rock.
"Where does it say? Oh, right here. Music to soothe the savage breast," she shouted. "Not beast. We read it wrong."
Francis was still puzzled. "So we soothed someone's breast?" Emma rolled her eyes, but was too excited to bicker.
I'm sure it means, like, their heart. Their feelings, you know?
Then she frowned.
But you're right. Who? The boy!
Frances exclaimed.
What boy?
Last night, when I hopped out of the stream, I saw a boy. He was sitting on a rock crying, and I was just about to come and get you, but then he went away.
He was crying.
Doesn't seem like the music soothed him, Emma said doubtfully.
No, it was him, all right.
Frances was sure of it.
A good cry can be very soothing.
She herself had experienced a number of prolonged crying sessions, usually the result of particularly fierce bickers, and always felt much better afterwards. Emma looked at her sister with new respect.
It was really you, she said. You did the hard part.
Frances blushed in pleasure and surprise.
I never could have done it without you, she said.
Indeed, said a voice from outside the cave entrance. And don't feel too bad about your mistake with Congreve. Lots of folks do the same. It's one of the most misquoted lines in English literature.
Together, the girls ran outside, but they were too late. All they saw was a last whirl of bright green cape disappearing into thin air.
House is too big for me on my own anyway, Gramps said.
It'll be good to be all together, Dad said. A bachelor pad.
He smiled and clapped Brian on the back. Brian could hardly believe his ears. They were moving out of the city and in with Gramps. He'd get to stay with Dougie and the woods.
For a few days, things were all jumble and fluster as Brian and Dad moved their stuff into Gramps' house. Dad sent Brian to the attic to store some boxes. Everything up there was generously furred with dust, and Brian sneezed a few times. There was a heap of old worn-out clothes nearby. Brian wiped the snot from his hand on whatever was on top. Some old green thing that probably hadn't been used in years.